You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
Am I supposed to say something now?
Yeah.
Like a joke?
Something.
What about this?
Okay. Today we're going to be talking about the first serial of the 15th season of Doctor Who, Horror of Fang Rock, which consists of four episodes that aired from September 3rd, 1977 to September 24th, 1977.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
You can follow him on Tumblr at mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com. And today, continuing a theme, we've had double guests for the past few episodes. We got double guests today.
Double the pleasure, double the fun.
Double the gum. Today we have with us, they're both from the same podcast.
Ooh.
One of them has been on the show before, twice before. We have the stars and co-hosts and awesome dudes from Harry Sullivan is an Imbecile. It's Brian Snape and Adam Clegg.
Yay!
Yay,
thank
Yay.
You.
Yay.
Hello.
Hello.
Now, I can't remember which one of you has been on the show before.
Adam has. Everybody loves Adam. He was there for when you guys did the Tomb of the Cybermen, and it was quite a tender moment indeed.
Ah, yes.
Classic, really.
I've always been here, lurking in the shadows.
Every time we've been yelling at somebody to stop bumping into the microphone, it wasn't our cat, it was Adam.
That fursuit time is something I don't like to talk about, though. You know.
I always said he was a pussy.
So, what's up with you guys?
We're doing well. Adam, how are you over there? It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon as we're recording it in the U.S. And for Adam, it's, 9 o'clock at night?
It is, so I've already had one gin and tonic, and maybe I'll have another. Who can tell? But we're talking about a good story, so I won't have to drink too heavily, which is this is a relief.
And since you're a new guest, tell us a little bit about yourself and how much Doctor Who have you experienced?
I'm closer to 40 than I'd like to admit, and I've been a Doctor Who fan since I was about 13, so that's the majority of my life. Obviously, I co-host the amazing and brilliant Harry Sullivan is an Imbecile with Brian.
Hello.
And a few years ago, I also did another podcast called The Naked Scarf. I think that's even still up. I don't know why it's still up and available, but apparently it is. Yeah, so I'm just your average Joe with a lot of opinions about Doctor Who, and I do have a lot of opinions, some of which I rant about on Twitter occasionally. So yeah, and I'm in England, and it's a lot later here than it is with you guys.
And how much Doctor Who have you? You seen all of it?
Yes, I've seen everything that's available to get. Obviously, not the things that are not available. I dip in and out of Big Finish. I read quite a lot of the new adventures. Big Finish I tend to only get when it's like on sale or something, because I don't rub enough banks to be able to afford everything they produce. No, actually, you know what? There is one bit of Doctor Who I have never seen, and that's episode 6 of The Time Monster, because I sat down and watched the whole damn thing, and I actually lost the will to live by episode 5. I thought, I'll watch that later. And that was about 5 years ago now.
See, that's how I felt about the mutants. I could not. I actually didn't mind the Time Monster as much as I just the mutants, though.
Oh, Time Monster has the most brilliant thing ever, though, and that's Baby Benton.
Baby Benton.
I feel that's a fetishist thing, to be honest with you. But, I mean, it does have Ingrid Pitt being seduced by Roger Delgado, so that should make it good. However, it manages to not be good. That was my memory of it. Maybe I'll sit down and think, oh, actually, this is a misunderstood classic, but that's very unlikely.
Before we jump into the serial we're talking about today, let's talk about New Who. You guys are caught up on that?
Yeah.
I'm finally caught up. I watched the Demons of Punjab last night. I like Jodie Whittaker. I'm not quite sure I'm really digging Chris Chibnall's direction on the show. It's some of the stories, while I'm enjoying them, are kind of underwhelming. So, you know, typical Chibbers.
I mean, for me, I think Demons of Punjab has been the highlight of the series so far.
And he didn't write it.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't got Gibber's fingerprints over it in the same way that something like... Rosa was good, but there are some moments of clunkiness in it, looking back on it, which I didn't feel Demons of Punjab had. And yeah, I mean, Jodie Whittaker is fantastic. I think all the main cast are good. I'm not quite convinced you can get away with four people in the TARDIS yet, particularly not when you're doing 50-minute stories. You know, it was different back in Hartnell when, you know, they could arrange from stories arrange from an hour and a half to 2 hours. But I'm still not quite convinced it's working here. Yeah, I'm not a massive Chris Chibnall fan, though. His scripts haven't been as bad as I thought. But the one thing I'm not digging is the new TARDIS set. Though I will just say this about it. Last night in this country, we had Children in Need on telly, and they had a little Doctor Who thing. It was very touching. Little girl with cystic fibrosis went to visit the TARDIS set. And whoever was shooting the TARDIS set for that bit should be directing for the damn series, because I actually thought, oh, that's what the concert room looks like for the first time, like six episodes in, and it's a charity shot. I'm like, oh, it's a long shot. Oh, right, that's how it fits together. And I was like... not happening in the series.
Yeah, it is a kind of an underwhelming TARDIS set. I mean, we have mentioned on our most recent episode, you know, it just seems like they were like, hey, remember the David Tennant, Chris Eccleston console room? Can you do that?
I love the crystal aesthetic, but it does seem very small.
Seems cramped, yeah.
It's a very new agey type TARDIS set.
We've sort of said our thoughts on the first four episodes and previous episodes. The last two episodes, I liked the Pating one. It was fun. It wasn't like deep or anything, but it was fun. And the last episode I thought was the best. And I think that is because Chibnall's not writing it. The two best ones we've had so far has been written by other people. I mean, Rosa was co-written. Yeah. I don't know why it was so front-loaded with Chibnall episodes.
Yeah, that was a weird choice.
That's definitely a thing you don't want to be, is front-loaded with Chibnall.
It makes it weirdly strange and even in a way, you know, because you're right, it's all that Chibnall, Chibnall, Chibnall. And now we're on a stretch of like, what, four or five episodes where he's not writing any of them? I mean, maybe he just thought, people don't like me, so I'll just front load it all out the way.
Get my shit out of the way and then we'll actually get to the good stuff.
Like, and I agree, it hasn't been terrible except for Arachnids in the UK. But there haven't been great stories. Like, it's kind of just been stuff has been happening and not really about anything. It's just kind of... we're doing an adventure.
And we're kind of hitting some threads here where it seems like every episode the big baddie turns out not to be the big baddie. I mean, we had that in Arachnids in the UK. You know, we have that in the Demons of Punjab. You know, these things that are supposed to be great big threats that all of a sudden are just kind of minimized.
I do keep expecting every episode at the moment to end with the Doctor looking at the camera and go, and man is the greatest monster of them all.
So far, it seems like racism is the true evil this season, so...
and who can argue with that?
Yeah, that's true. That's fair. That's very fair.
The subject matter tend to be more mature. I mean, they're dealing with things that are kind of hot-button topics for today. You know, racism, xenophobia...
Trump.
Stuff like that. Yeah, Trump. So yeah, I mean, it is kind of interesting how this one seems a bit more mired in the social issues of the day. It's kind of like a return to the Pertwee era, only without Pertwee.
But it's weird because people, well, it's not weird because people are terrible, but people are freaking out about, you know, social justice issues, quote unquote. And it's like, yeah, let's go back to how Doctor Who used to be, like last year where the Doctor punched out the living embodiment of exploitative capitalism for being racist to his black gay companion. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
But people... I think they're noticing it more in this country simply because it's the first woman doctor, and they're like, ah, that's politically correct, so everything else must be politically correct as well. And it's like, what do you mean by that? And they're like, women. It's very odd.
XY chromosomes, what the fuck?
I think it's not helped by the fact that Chibnall's not the best at subtlety. If he's talking about something in an episode, he's just like,
hey,
guess
you
what?
Know this thing?
We're talking about this issue today. And you're like, oh, okay.
It's like Keenan Ivory Wayans in Don't Be a Menace to Society while drinking your juice in the hood, you know, playing the mailman, coming around every now and again going, message!
I do think it's interesting that we're watching this new season and Classic Who at the same time, because we had the double whammy of Rosa followed up by The Talons of Wang Chiang.
God, that's a hell of a double bill for those.
Yeah.
Interesting experience.
It was a bit of a oof. It was an oof.
No, man, what's the matter? You guys couldn't get through the crusade, or?
I mean, you know, Robert Holmes, amazing writer, but occasionally,
Are we ready to start?
Let's
dive into...
Let's go for it.
Let's go for it. I'm all set. I'm all Twitter and Flutter and... My goodness, my nipples are all tingly.
Ah, nice. Same. Okay, so let's talk about the horror of Fang Rock. Is it horror or horrors? That's one of the things.
Horror. The horror.
Horror.
The horror.
Episode 1, which I have titled Tank Natural. I have an alternate title, which is just solely for one of our Patreons, and also a previous guest, Melissa, because she suggested this title while we were watching it, and I thought it was funny. Ghost Orgy Begins. Which makes no sense if you weren't part of the live stream. So, hey, donate to our Patreon and watch our live streams. So, we start with a lighthouse that is being attacked by a... Well, not being attacked, but there's a giant pink meteor thing that crashes to the sea.
You are just great with the descriptive words.
It's a pink meteor.
Thing. All right, continue.
That crashes into the sea next to the lighthouse. And then we meet the three lighthouse keepers. Who in my notes are Normal Guy, Growly Guy, and Terry Jones.
Thank God you mentioned that because, yeah, Ben reminds me so much of, like, you know, Terry Jones mid-season 3 of Monty Python.
Really does. This is the first thing I thought of when I saw him.
Well, you know, between lighthouse shifts, he goes and plays bass in the local progressive band just down the road. But
let's see, what are their real names? So we've already said Ben is the Terry Jones guy.
Reuben, Ben, and Hawkins.
Vince,
yeah. Because I thought it was weird because there's a Ben and a Vince, and we've had a Ben and a Vince on this show before. So it's like, this show is my friends.
My head done exploded at that factoid.
Joe Fax! The guy who has the growly voice, Reuben, he was previously on Enemy of the World as Bruce.
I could not understand him to begin with.
Yeah.
Almost at all.
Well, you don't understand me. Careful.
Ghosts.
Ghost boy. There it goes for dinner.
Him and Ben have this conversation where they're just arguing about, he's like very old school lighthouse and Ben's very new school lighthouse.
They're arguing about like electricity versus oil. Yeah.
And I could only really understand Ben's side of the conversation, so.
It's because you come from the electricity background, so, you know, obviously you're gonna be like, well, their argument doesn't make any sense.
I understood his words perfectly, but his meaning was lost on me. But the normal guy, Vince, has spotted the pink meteor, and everyone's like, you didn't see anything, you're probably fine. But he did. And also the meteor has spotted them, because we get their POV frequently throughout this serial. Like, it's like a sort of greenish circle, and everything they look at is black and white. And slightly distorted.
What you have to remember is monsters in Doctor Who in the 70s had terrible peripheral vision. Just couldn't look left or right or forward.
That explains so much about this show. Hiding in plain sight.
It always makes you think of Death of the Daleks, where you keep getting the Dalek point of view and it looks like the Daleks can't see jack shit. So you always think, like, have you conquered the universe? You can see like a tiny hole.
Those little bumpy bits are probably sensors. That's my theory.
Ew.
We're talking about the Rutan or the Daleks?
The Daleks.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I just wanted to talk about the Rutans.
Which, they were first mentioned in, what was it?
Time Warrior.
Yeah, I think I was in that episode, wasn't I?
Yeah, you were in the Time Warrior.
Well, I mean, I was in your episode, not necessarily.
Yeah, you were in that serial.
I was the one who played Dot Cotton from EastEnders, yeah.
And you also were the Night Double.
I was the one who wore the suit of armor and was doing the stabby motions, you know, for the robot.
Swing.
Back to the lighthouse, where Ben and Reuben are having a heated discussion about oil versus electricity. The fog sets in. A big fog. A fog unlike any other fog. A fog thicker than pea soup.
The foggiest.
And what should arrive in this fog? The TARDIS. And Leela gets out and is like, you told me I would like Brighton Beach. I do not like Brighton Beach.
It's not far from what Brighton Beach is actually like, to be honest, so I can understand the confusion.
At this point, also, the lighthouse's lights have turned off for mysterious reasons. And I think that's what maybe sparks the whole oil electricity conversation, because Ben was all like, this wouldn't happen with electricity. And then the other guy was like,
boy.
But the Doctor and Leela are going to the lighthouse, which they eventually see, and they hear a loud foghorn, not to be confused with a guy who sounds like foghorn.
They hear a loud foghorn leghorn. I say. Boy, it's about as sharp as a grapefruit.
But this is when Leela, for the second time that I've seen in this show, says that she feels something wrong. She gets like a premonition of sorts.
She's read the script.
Because she did that in Robots of Death as well. So that's a regular thing then, I guess.
She gets vibes.
I think it kind of gets dropped after this episode. I don't think it really comes up so much after this. I don't know if it comes up in Image of Fendel, but because it's kind of like the Chris Pratt thing of like, she's a warrior, so she's got super sharp senses. And then after this, it's kind of like, it's fine. We'll never mention this again.
Her spidey senses just go away. I think the lights come back on and then they go back off again. And Ben goes to figure out what's wrong with it. Is looking at the like furnace or something, and gets attacked by the green light and the
just
little
green
POV monster,
glowy thingy.
And he screams, but it's covered by the popcorn.
Those damn gels!
They're evil, I tells ya. The growly guy would say, "They're evil, I tells ya." Also
using gels this time.
After that point is when he starts going full on, like, paranoid. He's talking to Vince and just basically scaring him. Just like, there was people that were killed here ages ago and they've come back to take us, and ghosts and taint natural. Talking about the fog and everything.
Taint natural, boy.
As long as he's not talking about his taint, that's fine.
His taint's probably good. It's natural.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
It's a natural taint.
Look, it's three men. They spend a lot of time alone together in a confined space.
It gets
lonely.
These
things happen. Yeah, you know, I'm not judging.
I will have to say that we're kind of jumping ahead, but when the Doctor and Leela show up at the lighthouse, and Vince is kind of trying to suss out Leela, she basically shuts him down quite properly.
Yeah, he's like, this is a treat for me. I'm all alone. I'm like, oh no, it's fine. Could have gone a very bad way.
Well, when they do arrive, they go through and they don't see anybody. And like the Doctor is talking about the machinery there. He's asking a question about it to Leela, and she's like, "I don't know. I'm not a technician." And I was like, "Nice callback."
Because she is from the Sevateen.
The Sevateen and the Tesh. When I started watching this show, I didn't realize there would be quite so much continuity stuff. So I've been digging the little bits of references.
Well, this is Terrence Stix writing, so I mean, there you go.
Do you reckon in 1977 a fan immediately started writing about how Doctor Who was full of continuity references now and was alienating the casual viewer?
I'm a sucker for continuity stuff, though, so I enjoy it. But yeah, they get Vince talks to him and telling him everything about the lighthouse. Says that they should have bumped into Ben because he's the engineer and he should have been down there. And they're like, no.
Yeah, we didn't see anybody.
We saw Terry Jones, but
it was nude and playing an organ. Ironically, not his own. No, I'm sorry.
Oh, you get lonely in a lighthouse.
Yes.
That's when he says the he's almost comes on to Leela, I guess. But he also says that he's been so lonely that sometimes he just talks to seals.
I've been kissed by a rose. Not that seal, sorry.
But I love Leela's reaction to that, which is she just says, that is stupid.
Leela has no time for anyone in this story. She's very much like, she's very practical. She's like, stop screaming. Don't talk to seals. Terry Jones, put your clothes on. She has no time for anyone's shit in this story. It's hilarious. Even the doctors, she's just like, let's stab it.
I love her so much. She is no nonsense. That's great. Like, she's ready to fight, and she doesn't put up with anybody's bullshit. It's great.
She does just start changing.
Oh, yeah. She also just starts taking her clothes off, and Vince is like, oh, my word. And then, like, leaps.
Oh.
Hey, is this the thing where she's like, can you grab me some new clothes? And he's like, I don't have anything for a lady. And she's like, that's fine. I'm not a lady.
I don't give no shits. Give me what you got.
It's a great costume for her. I kind of almost wish they kept it because it's so... I can imagine Leela wearing that in a more practical way because it's just like, it's comfy, it's practical, she can keep a knife, maybe a couple in there. It all looks good. You know?
Yeah, it's kind of like a sort of grayish sweater thing almost.
It looks cozy.
It does. It looks very nice.
Her outfit really just screams hygge.
Did you say hygge or yoga?
Hygge. Hygge. It's the, was it a Finnish word for comfort? Is it Finland? No. Norway. Hygge.
I am literally going to just go and take your word for that.
Okay.
She's had a series of good outfits. What with this and Talons of Wang Chiang.
And of course, the oilskin or the loincloth stuff. So that one's for the dads.
The one for the dads was the one in Talons of Wang Chiang where she's just almost naked. When she's in
nipply.
The sewer and she's wet. What the hell? I still don't know how that got on TV.
Philip Hinchcliffe not giving a shit because they just fired him, I think, maybe.
Oh, yeah, that's probably it. But the doctor goes to check and see if he can find Ben, and he does, but he's, you know, dead. And this is when Vince starts to crack a bit. He's very sad about it, and now he's, like, starting to believe theories.
And we should note it. It's at this point in Chicago back in 1980-something or other that the signal is intruded by Max Headroom.
Was that in Chicago? I always thought it was in Canada for some reason. But
yeah, it was Chicago.
There's still clips of that. I think you can find it on YouTube of it just Max Headroom just coming in. I was a bit disappointed it's not on the DVD as an extra, which I was a bit disappointed with.
Well, doesn't he show his ass at one point on the thing?
Yeah, see, he gets whipped with a riding crop.
Nice. That's some family entertainment.
My favorite thing is that the first line you hear the doctor say, you know, the first line you hear after they come back is, as far as I can tell, a massive electric shock.
Do you know about this, Tony?
Vaguely, yeah. Like, I know it's a thing that happened, but I don't know.
These guys just, they still don't know who did it. These guys just hacked into the signal and, like, put video of them dressed up like Max Headroom just being idiots, basically.
For how long?
For about 90 seconds.
Damn.
About a minute and a half, 2 minutes. They were never found, whoever did it.
If it was you, we would love to have you on the show.
Yeah, dude, if that was you. And on Thanksgiving Day, or as Adam calls it, Thursday, 31st anniversary of the signal intrusion on WTTW.
We'll have to celebrate.
Burst into random family's houses dressed as Max Headroom.
Yeah, by putting on a Max Headroom mask and burying your buttocks to get whipped.
That is Thursday for me.
This time you get to have turkey.
I was going to say some kind of basing joke there, but I'm not going to go there.
Based her, damn near killed her.
So
anyway, you've lost control, my friend.
You guys have hijacked the podcast.
You've got two imbeciles on here.
I am actually whipping my own buttocks even as we speak, but, you know, it's just what I do when I'm podcasting, you know.
Got to keep that energy up.
That's why it takes us so long to get episodes out. Oh, I'm sorry, it wasn't a writing crop that he was being spanked by. It was a fly swatter.
Oh, well, that's not as fun.
Don't kink shame.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
What are your specific opinions about the pros and cons of each?
I don't know. I just feel like a fly swatter is not going to have the same heft. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you have a white, more surface area to hit.
Right. Is it like one of those classic, like, you know, the red plastic with the wire handle sort of deal?
You know, I'm not watching the video right now. I'm just reading about it on Wikipedia, so I really can't tell you.
But yeah, I guess there would be more holes, so that would, like,
it would make a more satisfying sound, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's for certain.
I think we're all avoiding the big question of, when is Max Headroom's Big Finish box set coming out? Because surely it's time for that spin-off.
Coming soon from Big Finish Productions, Max Headroom, the Signal Intrusion.
And then if we go that far, then we can get them to do the creator's other magnum opus. We can do some spin-offs of the Super Mario Brothers film. That's what I want.
Mario is played by David Bradley. It's me, Mario.
He'd have to do a really bad Brooklyn accent, though, because the movie version, he did the Brooklyn, not the Italian.
No, I mean, I'm doing as good of a David Bradley Mario as he's doing a David Bradley First Doctor. Ooh. He went there. Jesus Christ.
Fight!
I'd rather see Richard Herndl play Mario. That's all I'm saying, you know?
No, Richard Herndl can play Luigi.
I want this now, though. I legitimately enjoy the Super Mario Brothers film. Okay, let's move on from that embarrassing confession. Okay, so back to Horror of Fang Rock, which Tony was like, I hope it has I think it's going to have vampires. It's going to have vampires, right? It didn't have any vampires.
No vampire. No, not a single vampire.
So close.
It was going to originally, though. It was originally a vampire script, but the BBC nicked it because...
Dracula.
Yeah, they were doing a Dracula. Was it Jack Warner as Dracula? It's a slightly odd casting choice, I know that. I haven't seen it. But they went, oh no, you look like you're taking the piss. And so Terrence Dix just went, all right, I can knock up something like this in about half an hour, and gave them Horror Fang Rock.
I think it was Louis Jordan as Count Dracula. Or as we say in America, Louis Jordan.
The vampire serial, eventually, they did actually do it at some point, right?
Yeah, season 18, State of Decay.
That doesn't sound like a vampire story at all.
You know what does Horror Fang Rock? Fang is right in the title.
That's what I'm saying.
Get with it, Doctor Who, in the 70s.
With your flares.
Growly, I can't remember his real name. Ruben. like the sandwich. Reuben continues his conspiracy, telling his conspiracy theories to Vince, and says that he thinks that the doctor and Leela are spies and that they killed Ben. And also says Ben's probably an angry spirit now, probably just ready to get some ghostly revenge.
Just so you know, Ben's probably really pissed because he's dead now.
It is basically, don't worry, but we are going to have to deal with a poltergeist. But it's fine. But it will haunt us the rest of our days. But it's fine. Don't panic. Keep pressing the foghorn. But it's a ghost. His people management skills are not fantastic.
Yeah, you get the sense of why they decided to put him out on a lighthouse in the middle of an island.
In his first scene, I was like, God, I hope he's one of the first ones to die, because I cannot understand him at all.
Little did you know. Spoilers, he's the last one to die.
Is he, though?
No.
Well, because Reuben does die, but then there's another Reuben.
Reuben the Rutan.
There's a double Reuben.
That's what I'm saying. You still have to hear him, though. You still have to hear his voice.
Vince, pull the foghorn.
I'm never going to get tired of that. That's great.
Put on something frilly.
Been alone 10 years. Fed on the tights.
Vince, it's your turn in the barrel again.
Lighthouse. So what I'm gathering is lighthouses. They's kinky.
I mean, it's shaped like a phallus, so what do you expect?
That's fair. So everybody's like, we should send a wire and say that Ben's dead. Reuben does not want to do that for some reason?
Yeah, I didn't really understand his reasoning.
He's really suspicious about the doctor and Leela, but I don't know how that transfers to not sending a wire about Ben being dead.
I think he's just waiting to the morning, isn't it? Like when the fog clears or something. It's not super obvious why, but...
But it's at this point that Leela's like, let's fucking stab it. There's a monster here. Let's go to town.
Let me fight
it. And the doctor's like, no, don't do that.
It could kill you.
But Leela does what she wants.
Leela's like the honey badger, man. Leela don't give a shit.
I mean, between Reuben's, oh, everyone's a ghost now, we're going to get haunted, and Leela's, let's just stab it. I mean, the crisis management in this place is appalling. And the doctor doesn't really seem to care that much about anyone. He's like, oh, well, we'll all be dead soon.
But Leela goes out hunting herself in the fog.
Hunting by herself, not hunting herself.
Right. She's hunting to find out what's really inside her, you know? But no, she mostly just finds some dead fish. And there is a glowing green thing, but she does not see it.
So she can't stab it.
She does poke the fish, though, with the knife.
Ben's corpse goes on walkabout.
Yeah, because his body's just gone from where it was. Vince is getting, like, really scared by this whole thing. A ghost, that's what is walking the land.
Reuben was right.
He hears someone coming and is freaking out, but it's just Leela. And she's like, calm the fuck down, man. Stop being such an idiot.
I was gonna say, Leela again is just like, you're being dumb.
It is. I mean, her no bullshit, her no fucks given, no bullshit attitude is so refreshing at this period of time.
Okay, so I've said this before, but we did the like third Doctor wrap-up. We were ranking our companions, and I kind of bumped Sarah Jane down a little bit just because she wasn't in it much. And I was like, I do really like her, but I feel she's going to be at the top of the list for when we do the fourth Doctor wrap-up. But I don't know, man. Leela's amazing. I love Sarah Jane, but Leela is pretty damn good.
I mean, how can you despise Adric?
I don't know. I haven't gotten to him yet, so we'll see.
I mean, I think a lot of what makes Leela work, because kind of on paper the character shouldn't, but it's Louise Jameson just doing a very good job throughout, even if by all accounts her and Tom Baker... Well, apparently this is a story where she put her foot down and Tom Baker actually started treating her like a human being and not like a, I wish you were a cabbage on my shoulder. I think she makes it work in a way that isn't always appreciated enough because it kind of really shouldn't work on paper. Kind of violent, quote-unquote savage that travels with the Doctor. But he never really stops from stabbing people even when she leaves. There's not really a lot of, in some ways, a lot of character development there, but she's always very watchable, and it works in a way that's surprising.
And you have somebody who is really kind of out of touch with technology, and I mean, well, let's just say, you know, civility and all that. You know, somebody who is basically learning about things. You know, it's a lot of people compare it to Pygmalion or, you know, My Fair Lady or something like that. But Leela works in the same way that Katarina never could work, and I think that's down more to the writers having a better idea of how to handle that kind of relationship. You know, I think a lot of it has to do with the Fourth Doctor, less than it does, you know, with anything. But The comparison I always make in my head for some reason is I always link her with Katarina as just as a producers just basically threw up their hands and gave up on Katarina, whereas, you know, they kind of created a character that was, you know, very primitive and, you know, not very well known with technology, and they make her work.
It's worth just thinking about Hartnell having to go, "My dear girl, please stop stabbing people.
Would you stop stabbing people?" Or if it was David Bradley, "Would you stop stabbing people?"
You two are going to fight by the end of this.
And I'm here for it. You're officially the Yoko Ono. You're breaking up the imbeciles.
But I want to expand a bit on what you were talking about, because I don't know if Tony knows about this. What? There was a scene in this serial. I don't specifically know which scene it was, but they were supposed to enter a room, and Leela was supposed to come in first, followed by the doctor. And Tom Baker kept rushing in ahead of her. And then she just basically put her foot down, and they like kept refilming the scene and until they did it the way that it was supposed to be done, with her coming first. Because he was like basically trying to steal the scene or whatever. And she's like, "No, be a goddamn professional, asshole." And then Tom Baker's like, "Yeah, okay."
I mean, it's around this time that stories of Tom Baker's behavior really start to take off. And he's not always been the most gracious of co-stars. So they lump him with Matthew Waterhouse as some kind of terrible revenge near the end.
Saddling you with this companion, but it's going to smell like adolescence. Oh, the TARDIS.
I've even seen him in interviews, like on the DVDs and stuff, being like, "Yeah, I was kind of a dick. I'm sorry."
Oh, yeah, fair play. He totally puts his hands up to it. And he's like, "Yeah, I was pretty awful to work with." But
fame, man, it goes to your head. And I should know because of the fame I've gotten from this very podcast.
You're famous in the internet.
Yeah, at least two people know who I am.
Are you counting Tony in that?
No. Hell no.
Tony doesn't know me at all.
Tony's like, "I don't want any part of this. Get my name off the credits." Anyway, we're talking about the Horror Fangrock.
Ruben says, "Hey, there's a ship heading straight for the coast, and our lighthouse is all fucked up, so..."
It's gonna crash.
It's gonna crash.
And then it crashes. And then that's the end.
Yeah, it's the end of the first episode.
We did it.
Yay!
That's the end of episode one. We are now into episode two, which I have two titles for. One is Do Not Adjust Your TV Sets, and the other is The Beast of Fangrock.
I also like to call this one, "Oh Bugger, It's the Upper Class." I mean, I don't think this one was written as some kind of class war, because that's really not Terrence Dix's style or, I think, his political beliefs. But I always feel like it's like the upper class come in and they just make everything worse by some stretch.
I wonder if he was just writing this and went, "Oh shit, I've run out of characters to kill.
Just crash a whole new boat full of people."
You know what this story needs? A body count.
I like at the beginning of this, we get the recap with the ship crashing and everything. And like Leela is like interested in stuff. She's like, "Do we need to go save them or whatever?" And then they're like, it crashes, and they're like, "They're probably all dead." And then she's just like, "Oh, all right, whatever." She's like, no longer cares.
I do find it fascinating watching this. Yes, I mean, I've seen this a few times. It's one I had on VHS before I got it on DVD. But it's kind of fascinates me watching it again, is how little the Leela or even the Doctor really care about anyone there. They're kind of like, "Oh, we have to survive this." But you don't get the impression that like the Doctor's particularly fond of anyone. And Leela's, yeah, like, Leela's like, "Oh, they're probably dead, let's leave them." It's like the team, if you were in the Doctor universe in trouble, probably the TARDIS team you'd least want to turn up to try and save you, because you'd just be like, "Oh, they're probably just going to leave me to die."
To be fair, not most of the cast, the secondary characters here, not many of them are very sympathetic, other than maybe Vance.
No, I mean, I think, what's his name, Skimsail, is it? He's likable in a way that he's flawed like the rest, but he kind of acknowledges and owns those flaws, and he has a certain charm to it. And I think he was, spoilers for the end of this podcast, he was supposed to survive, but they changed their mind at the last minute because they're like, "Why not?
How's he going to get home?
He's got a foghorn."
Cho, you just have them referred to in your notes as asshole and lady asshole.
No, I have lady asshole and a guy. That's what I have.
Ah, lady asshole. So good to see you. I haven't seen you since last season. How's Lord Asshole? Oh, he's pretty big. He's pretty big. Ah, I'd love a big asshole. No, wait.
So they go to get him, the people that survived the shipwreck, which is, I think there's like four people, right?
Yeah, three, but also including the guy who was manning the boat.
Right, who shows up a little bit later.
He had to go grab a Starbucks.
While they're going to go get them, Leela notices a weird jellyfish in the water, right? Which is going to be our
or baddie. She tells the doctor about this, but they don't want to share that with anybody else. Don't want people panicking. Don't want to get Vince all riled up again. We know how that guy is. But let's see, there's an asshole character who's just a rich fuckwad. There is a lady fuckwad who, she's not like an asshole like he is. She just screams a lot. And it's kind of annoying.
Lord Pomadale and his highly strung secretary Adelaide Lessage. That's the Wikipedia.
She does not like Leela.
She gives Leela some serious side eye.
My favorite is when Leela decks her. I have a fantasy of Leela and Victoria Waterfield appearing in the same story, and Victoria's screaming, and Leela just lets go and just tells her to shut up.
And you can find that fanfic.
So you can contact us at imbecilepod@gmail.com or tweet us at imbecilepod. All these opinions are mine, not necessarily Adam's or Joe's or Tony's.
Sometimes they're not even Brian's.
Not even mine. Yeah, they're not even mine. I just pull the shit out of my ass.
But and then there's the third guy who is, he's got a big old mustache and is less of an asshole.
Harker.
No, Harker's the guy they're waiting for, isn't it?
Harker is the bosun who, is the guy they're waiting for. I mean, they're not really waiting for him, but...
he's the captain guy.
Bosun.
Okay. I can't remember any of their names. They all die anyway, it doesn't matter. Spoilers.
Food for worms. Food for worms.
They all sort of start chatting a bit, and we get to learn all their sort of character quirks. My favorite thing is the doctor is... The main asshole guy is talking to the doctor, and the doctor is basically just fucking with him a bit.
The doctor does not give a crap. He's just like, yeah, whatever. We'll probably all be dead in the morning. Good news. Bye.
Like, the guy's talking to him, the doctor just goes, oh, wait, hold on a second. Did we introduce ourselves? Like he just to get him to shut the fuck up, and it's great. I love it.
Yes, a very anti-Ford Prefect moment.
But then Harker shows up after Vince freaks out and thinks that it's going to be Ben. And Leela's like, come down. Damn it. Jesus, what is wrong with everybody? But the asshole guy wants to leave. And like he's basically trying to get everybody to send a wire. That's his plot line.
Yeah, he has some sort of insider information that'll make him some money.
He has a hot tip from Skinsale.
My notes are very like just... Very, very, very vague.
Why don't you just open up a wiki or something?
That's cheating.
To be fair, my notes make very little sense. I seem to have written, if you love oil so much, why don't you marry it?
oil, it's good lubrication. Oh, what?
I do have a note that says, I think they're all alone. The Doctor and Leela are somewhere else. And they're talking about the Doctor and Leela. And the Colonel guy, the guy with the mustache, basically gets a little bit gross about Leela. It's all like, well, that's a... I don't mind being trapped with her, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
When I was in India... I mean, they're very stock type of characters in a way, but, I mean, fair play to Terrence. He does make them work. You know, you kind of know who they are very quickly. He's very good at sketching it out, you know, with the conflicts and all that. He kind of knows what he's doing, Terrence, really. I mean, you know, must be said.
And also, at that point, that's when that woman sort of is like... very jealous of Leela as well. She's like, I'm pretty damn good looking myself. Why is everybody being so hung up on this woman in a gray sweater?
Yes, look at me.
The Doctor and Leela go hunting for clues and stuff to try to find the jellyfish, I guess. They find a strong electrical field, enough to kill a person. That's what the glow is, and that's what's killing fish. It's very... The monster is basically David Lynch. It goes and glows, and you don't really know what it is.
That's some Twin Peaks shit.
That's some Twin Peaks, yeah.
Oh, okay. I was like, okay.
I mean, not literally David Lynch.
The monster is David Lynch. It's into transcendental meditation?
No, I mean, it's a very David Lynchian monster sort of situation, the way that's done.
It was actually a sound man that they just accidentally shot, and then they're like, oh, we'll have to include him in the narrative now.
But the monster is literally just like, hello, I'm the monster.
I'm coming to kill you.
Coop.
That is terrifying.
It's when David Bowie appears in the doorway.
There's nowhere you could hide if David Lynch is coming for you.
Could you imagine going in a dark alleyway and being confronted with just a very loud David Lynch? That'd be scary.
No, I can't.
Hello.
No.
Welcome to my carnival.
Coop, heading up the Bend, Oregon.
Twin Peaks is so good. Let's just talk about Twin Peaks.
Okay. Yeah, I mean.
Sure.
I like this serial, though. This serial is good.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Just my notes don't make any goddamn sense. So yeah, okay, so yeah, this...
we watched it too long ago.
Yeah. So yeah, what you said, the asshole has some insider info, which he got from the colonel.
Yes.
But that information will fuck over the colonel if he uses it, right?
It'll destroy his reputation as a gentleman.
We never learn what that information is, right? It's basically just a MacGuffin.
No, it could be anything. It could be buy tiny plastic ponies, small girls will love them or something. And you're like, ah, I don't know.
And 30 years later, it will become a cartoon and drive men crazy. I'm from the future. I have invented bronies.
Yeah, it doesn't matter because all these people fucking die.
The asshole is just like really, really annoyed that he can't cash in on this insider info.
And really,
no one will let him.
It's like foggy and stormy out there, and he's like, let's go back, we gotta go. And everyone's like, what the fuck are you talking about? We literally just almost died. And he does not care.
Money does not make for a practical mind.
He actually, everybody's like asleep, and the asshole wakes up Harker. They get him, he tries to get him to send the message, but he's like, no. And they argue and they fight, and it wakes up everybody, and there's just like a big brouhaha going on, which the doctor comes in to break up. So this guy just he's very annoying and has a goal though, which every good character needs. Am I wrong?
He just thanks for the hot writing tip.
You're welcome. How to Write by Joe. Have a goal.
genius, pure genius.
Somebody needs to tell that to Stephen King. Ruben comes in and basically does his whole like, it's spooky. It's happened before. It'll happen again. Bye. The asshole continues to asshole. Leela tells him to get in line or get stabbed, which is great. Then, yeah, it gets colder. The lights dim. Ruben screams.
And now he's possessed.
Maybe. We don't know that yet. We just know he screams. That was a completely accurate depiction of that scream. That was great.
Thank you. I might have listened to this a lot.
That's literally exactly how it sounds.
It's pretty dead on.
Later we'll hear the Rutan scream, and it's the exact same scream too. So, but that's the end of episode 2. We're now into episode 3, which I've called It's Not Easy Being Green.
Aww.
And that's when we first get the lady.
Having a meltdown?
Yeah.
Having a thrombo.
She is what the companions have been in the past. That's what she's doing.
No, they've never been that bad.
No, that's probably
I was going to say, not even Victoria Waterfield is that bad.
I don't remember. Does she pass out at any point? Cause, like,
I think she does faint like at least does. Once.
There is some highly dramatic fainting going on.
I always kind of admire people who faint when they're given bad news. It always looks quite restful. I always feel quite bad I can't do it. Like, you know. The tax bill come in, doing. Sounds quite nice.
You have a cavity.
The thing is, they don't have couches for that anymore.
Fainting couches?
Yeah. If I had one, if we had one like in the family room, I'd probably faint more often. We're just not well equipped for it.
One of my friends has a fainting couch, and when I stay at their house, that's what I sleep on. It's comfortable, but I never, you know, feel like I'm faint or have the vapors or anything.
But when you stay over there, do you dramatically throw yourself onto it before you go to sleep?
Well, I weigh about 250 pounds, and that would probably break the damn thing.
So what you're saying is they don't run into the room and shout, Brian, we're going to be dead by morning, and then you just collapse down.
Ah! Let me have a slow lie down.
I feel like you're not properly utilizing this couch.
Yeah, I feel like you're not living your best life.
I mean, you know, I can swoon, but, you know.
There you go. I think that's an acceptable substitution.
Okay, thank you.
So, at this point, also, Ruben, he's in zombie mode right now.
He's possessed!
What I like is the really, really creepy smile that he has every time he comes upon a victim. You know, his eyes widen. He kind of gets that, oh, Ruben, you're gonna have some fun.
Long time alone, three men in that lighthouse.
Just saying.
The lighthouse turns back on. The doctor, I'm just reading my notes now. Doctor says an equation and touches static. There's like a weird spot behind the furnace thing, right? It's all
gross.
Yeah. It's all electrified. Now the asshole moves on to try to get the colonel to send the message again. And he says no. So the asshole leaves and the colonel follows him. Has to tell the lady to stay there because she's like, don't leave me alone. And then cries. And he's like, just stop. But he's basically going up to Vince, who's at the light. and trying to get him to send the message. And he's going to bribe him and be like, here's some money. Send this message for me. It's in code, so you won't know what it says. But I know what it says, and it's, I'll make you rich. I'll give you, here's some of the money now, and I'll give you more once the pony tip comes in.
50 whole pounds. 50 pounds, as we call it in London, around at the pub. It's going to be 100 in total, isn't it? He's like, oh my God, so much money. I'm going to cry quietly now, excuse me.
I can buy myself 3 sweaters.
I can buy myself a real lady.
Of the night.
And get away from these seals.
What seals? Sorry, obscure Kids in the Hall reference there. Anybody who who's laughing right now, well.
They're not us.
Damn.
Sorry, that was me.
Wow.
Damn.
I haven't seen Kids in the Hall. I've seen the movie.
Have you read the book, though?
There's a book?
No.
Then no, I haven't.
I actually have. It's not as good.
There's a Target novelization of all the previous episodes.
Written by Terrence Dix.
They really expand the kids.
It goes into a lot of stuff they didn't have, like, the money to do.
The budget, yeah. Because, you know, the mind gives you the best pictures.
And it, like, ties up some, like, continuity errors here and there.
This is a weird bit. We should move on.
Finally, there's closure to the chicken lady story.
And the guy who squeezes the heads.
Yes. Crushes the heads. Come on. I'm a fan. I have to be that pedantic.
I literally don't know what we're talking about.
Talking about Kids in the Hall.
It's a Canadian sketch comedy show.
Okay. Is that where crushing your head comes from?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm crushing your head.
My parents just used to do it all the time. There are so many, like, references to things that I say, even though I've never seen or watched, like, what they're from, because my parents used to do it all the time. That's one of them.
Well, now you have an excuse to watch.
The movie's good, too. I've seen the movie. Brain Candy. So, the colonel overhears this sort of transaction, this bribe happening. But also at this point, the green jellyfish is climbing up the side of the lighthouse.
How would you, like, in detail describe it?
Green jellyfish.
I need a little bit more than that.
Glowing green jellyfish.
An amoeba-like thingy scaling the side of a
phallic.
The biggity bong.
The lighthouse?
Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Okay.
What do you want me to? How do you want me to describe it more? It's a green jellyfish.
I don't know. I just wanted you to paint me a word picture.
It's green, and it's jellyfish-esque.
It glows.
Mm-hmm. It's your typical glow in the dark green.
Uh-huh.
Like if it's been, like, you know, when something is like been affected by radiation in old movies and TV shows, it's that.
All right, thanks.
And it's a bunch of, like...
kind of looks like a jawbreaker to me.
Really?
Like a sour candy. All right, that's fine. We can move on.
Anyway, as we were...
It was climbing up this jawbreaker, or whatever. Sour candy is climbing up the side of the lighthouse. The doctor comes out, which causes the asshole to be like, oh, I better hide, so they don't see me doing this shady deal. And he goes out onto the, like, lighthouse ledge, the outside of the lighthouse.
Goes, Core, is it cold out here? Hey, what's this green thing climbing up the side of the... Bye!
Exactly. That's exactly what happens.
With the Jerry Lewis scream and all.
I'm not sure exactly where this happens, but there is a scene where Vince burns the money that he got. And I was not sure why he was doing that. I wasn't sure if he was burning the money or if he was burning the message. But it wasn't the message. It was the money.
The money.
Yeah, it's not quite clear because I'm thinking Vince, you could at least keep the money. No one's going to care. Maybe he's worried he's going to be linked to, like, accuse of pushing him off or something. But it's not made. Yeah, it's odd because they gave it quite a bit of attention, him, like, burning it. But then, yeah, it's not something that actually goes anywhere.
According,
they all die.
According to what I read on the wiki, it's explained in the novelization, which is that, yeah, he was worried that that people were going to think he killed the asshole and took his money. So
we just burned it.
So he just burned it instead.
This is so much less suspicious. No one ever suspects fire. Just burning my money. It's perfectly normal. That's what lighthouse keepers do.
I think the doctor has also told Leela to try to talk to Reuben, but he won't let anybody in. So she's like, I'm going to Jack Torrance this bitch, and gets a sledgehammer and is like banging on the door with it.
Yeah, it's the same thing because the doctor goes, oh, he's probably traumatized. So obviously Leela's approach to mental health is take a fucking hammer to it and just smash the her career as a mental health nurse never really took off, you know, but just, yeah, it's great. Leela Moo, it's just like, how do I get first? I know, I'll take a hammer to it. Imagine if, because the new series loves a sonic screwdriver, because as RTD said, the doctor should never be stopped by a door. And I guess this is the old series approach to it, which is hammer.
It's a lot more visually interesting, I think, to smash it with a hammer than to sonic screwdriver everything.
I kind of wish they'd kept the hammer throughout the new series now. Just every single doctor just smack you at doors with hammers until they come down.
Just have the doctor carry a sledgehammer wherever they go. The doctor doesn't believe in sea creatures, but he does believe in aliens.
Sorry, I think the doctor does believe in like fish and things. I think we should make that clear. He's not like going octopuses, never fucking seen one, they don't exist. You know, he does believe in sea creatures. I think that's a very important distinction to make.
Sorry, like sea monsters. Which, I don't know why, because he's like, I don't think there are such things as sea monsters, but aliens, sure.
From the man who fought the sea devils.
But Vince calls down and says, hey, the asshole fell off the lighthouse, because he shouldn't have been up here in the first place.
The asshole fell off the lighthouse, and not that he was bribing me or anything.
You don't have any proof of that whatsoever.
Exactly. Hey, what are these ashes? Shh, never mind.
Vince, where did you get that fine new jacket and gold chain?
I beat up Flavor Flav. No.
But this is when they say he died, and then the lady just starts screaming, and Leela just...
And Leela slaps her.
Right across the face. It's real nice.
So good. Just, you know, violence, physical violence, that's my jam.
Yeah, I mean, Leela just Rick James her.
Everybody sort of leaves to go investigate the dead asshole.
And the secretary said that her psychic said that this would happen.
Her psychic predicted all this. And then Leela gets to say, I don't believe in that bullshit. I believe in science.
The psychic was right, though. I mean, it's not like things are going really well. It's like, that psychic was spot fucking on.
But the doctor comes back in with the dead asshole. The lady freaks out again and thinks that the colonel did it because they were having that whole big brouhaha earlier.
Also, and his name is Colonel, and that is like a whole clue thing.
You have to think about it. I mean, the fact that they're carrying him around is kind of a grotesque thing.
You don't see it either, because, like, it's just slightly off camera, so you don't see the, like, gory bits.
Here you go. Here's your dead boss.
She, like, storms off thinking that the colonel did it, and, like, I'm going to go cry in my room. The colonel tells the doctor what did happen, like, because he overheard the whole bribe thing. He's like, I overheard this and everything, so I guess... He just fell off. They can't send out a telegram or whatever because the colonel destroyed the machine. And the reason why he did that wasn't to, you know, like, stop them from getting out. It's just so he could stop the asshole from...
ruining his reputation as a gentleman.
Well, you know, these things are important.
They all sort of go to talk about this, and that's when Reuben comes in and sees Harker and then does that creepy smile you were talking about. Very unsettling.
Oh, I'm lonely.
So the doctor tries to figure out what killed the asshole, says it wasn't the fault, he was electrocuted before he fell.
I mean, he died before he died.
That happens a lot on this show. It wasn't this that killed it, it was this. It was fright.
And just then, all the power goes out at the lighthouse.
Harker dies, right?
Harker is getting the beautiful smile of Reuben at him.
And then we also find out that Reuben is also dead. Because they go and they find this other... They go into this back room and they're like, oh shit, Reuben's dead body has been here. And he's been dead for a while. So that guy that we thought was Reuben is not Reuben. It's probably the monster. And also, the doctor says lycanthropy, which I don't...
Yeah, that confused me.
Yeah, it's a weird moment, actually.
Because we go from vampires to werewolves.
And neither one of them are actually in this serial.
And I'm pretty certain that's not what lycanthropy... lycanthropy is anyway. I think it was very odd moment.
Very odd choice of words. But the doctor's like, uh-oh, guys, I fucked up. I was trying to lock the monster out, and I'm pretty sure I locked the monster in. Uh-oh.
But at the same time, he's so gloriously unapologetic about it that he's a bit like, low, I fucked up. Sorry, guys. You imagine like a David Tennant would be like, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. Or even Jodie Whittaker now would be like, I'm really sorry. He's just like, yeah, whatever.
Guys, I did a goof.
A done goof.
I boo-booed.
Oh, man, I made a right boner.
The good news is, I'm the titular character, so I'll probably survive. The rest of you, it's not looking great.
Who cares?
It's not exactly called the Harker Show, now is it?
Does your face appear in the title credit sequence? I don't think it does.
That's the end of episode 3. We're now into episode 4, which I again have two titles for. Reuben the Rootin and The Family Jewels.
Oh, I see what you did there.
5 out of 10. I'm real proud of you.
Thanks. So, Reuben 2 meets Vince, kills him. The killing spree just starts in this episode. Well, it continues, really. But yeah. It amps up a bit.
We got some characters left alive, so we got to take care of them.
It's one of those stories, watching it again, I seem to remember think that a lot of the deaths were spread out, but they're really not. It's kind of like back half of episode 3 and this, and something like everyone's just like, there's no build up to half the deaths. You literally cut to people just screaming and dying.
Yeah, I don't think we ever actually see how Reuben the Rootin kills them. You see the POV, they scream, and then we cut back and they're just dead.
Well, no, we get to see Hawkins die, because, you know, he gets the blue filter of death.
And Harker gets the tentacles thing, right? Or no, not Harker, the Colonel.
You see tentacles on Harker, too, because it's that really, we'll see it when Skinsale dies, but it's the, here, if we roll back the video, they won't know that we shot this thing backwards. It'll look like the tentacles are grabbing him, not just pulling off of him.
I gotta say, reverse footage works for me a lot of the time. I don't know why. I always know it's reverse footage, but I'm always like, that looks neat.
I'm always so impressed.
Like in Pyramids of Mars when that guy gets shot.
When it's like related to time travel, I'm always like, it was broken and now it's not. How did they do that? Every time.
What is that, in the Edge of Destruction when the glass falls and breaks and then comes back into...
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
My memory's working. Yay.
They also do it in Invasion of the Dinosaurs. They break a glass and then unbreak it.
Yeah, and they also have reverse footage in The Power of Kroll. Kroll. Kroll.
Kroll.
Kroll.
Kroll.
Kroll.
We'll get that someday.
It's basically one long fart joke, Power of Kroll. I mean, that's what you have to remember when watching it.
I am looking forward to that. But the monster's going around killing. But Leela, she's not worried. Because she's like, hey, we got the doctor. You'll fix it, right?
I think she's more not worried because she's got a knife, to be honest. She's more like, got a knife, it's fine.
One's never alone with a knife.
She is like, hey, let's pretend we don't know that Reuben is a Rootin. Get close to it. Do the stabby stab. Huh? Huh?
I would like to do one stabby stab, please.
But the doctor's like, no, it'll electrocute us, so we can't get close to it. It won't kill us.
What if we wear rubber? You know, rubber's a good conductor. So we get up close to him, think it's Reuben. Nah, never mind. What if we build a large wooden badger?
What if we just burn the lighthouse down?
I think two characters dressed up in rubber attacking a tentacle monster is very popular in parts of Japan.
But the doctor finds a beacon in the place that is basically sending out a signal to other Rootins, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to hunker down and defend this lighthouse.
This lighthouse is defended.
Yeah, my next note does say, Lady passes out and Leela rolls her eyes. So good.
I like is when Leela's just like, oh, just shut up, Jesus Christ.
When does she finally die, though?
They try to escape and leave the room, and then Reuben comes in, and I think she puts up, like, the least amount of resistance in the world.
And he kills her. The colonel runs out of the room, but she gets dead.
She gets deaded, Eccles.
And there's also a brief little moment where the doctor's, like, looking for stuff. He's, like, searching a room. Reuben is coming in or whatever, so he basically climbs out the window.
And there's that really convincing CSO shot of the doctor hanging out of the window, even though he's moving.
Yeah. They're getting a little bit better with their CSO, though.
It's less fuzzy around the edges.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, specifically when they're on the top of the lighthouse, that's definitely CSO, but it doesn't... Sometimes it looks fine. Sometimes... sometimes.
Sometimes it's not the worst.
It's a known fact that even years after we stopped producing, Barry Letts used to sneak into the Doctor Who studio and edit in CSO sequences into episodes that weren't supposed to have them. You know, it's a proven fact. They look at the Russians and go, who put this, Barry, who put the CSO shot here?
Not me. I don't have any attachments to CSO. Because he was a Buddhist. Oh, shut up.
But it doesn't. That really doesn't do much because he just climbs out, waits a bit, and then climbs back in. It was almost a cliffhanger.
Just a bit. It was more, yeah, a window hanger. In good news, Adelaide, the screechy woman, gets killed, and then Skin Sail legs it,
and Leela throws a knife at Reuben,
misses him, or goes right through him completely.
This isn't the Reuben you're looking for.
This is an imitation Reuben.
This is advanced Reuben.
This is a vegan Reuben.
Well, it's green, so there you go. But then we get the big confrontation between the Doctor, in which we discover what the hell Reuben has been all this time.
Big ball of snot.
Big saran wrap, glowy saran wrap thing of Rutan.
It's just a booger from a giant.
And actually, it's another interesting bit. We talked about Teshnishin earlier. It's another bit of continuity. Because, I mean, Starons hadn't been in the show for a couple of years at this point. Was it Sontaran Experiment last time they turned up? About 3 years, 3 years ago? And I guess, actually, of course, they turn up at the end of this season as well. Spoilers, by the way, for Invasion of Time there. But he starts talking about the Sontarans. And again, I feel if that was nowadays, there would be lots of people going, alienating the casual viewer. Robert Holmes has to go. I wonder what point Terrence was like, you know what? I'm going to make it the route. You know, was that just last minute? Oh, I'll just throw this in here.
I think he did it as like a nod to like the fans and stuff. But also, I don't think it's like you have to know what they are to understand the plot. So,
oh no, it works. It absolutely works. And I quite like the way they're so opposite to the Sontarans. The Sontarans are like, you know, short, stout, and definitely not jello. But they're very stale, static Sontarans. You know, they're all the same the way. They're all the same whichever actor's playing them.
It's almost like they're clones.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. But the Rutons, it's, you know, are more moldable and change shape and more liquidy.
It's adaptive.
Yeah, in the way the Sontarans aren't.
I was going to say, it makes you wonder how many times the Rutons have taken the form of a Sontaran.
I wonder if that's been done. That's an interesting idea.
I'm always a bit surprised that the Rutons haven't turned back up in the new series, but they were in one of the video games that they had free on Gunpowder Plot or something you could download during, I think it was Series 6, I want to say. They had a few of them, and they did that one. It was free, which is my review of it. But never in the series itself, which I'm always a bit surprised at, because they seem such a... If you wanted to make a tribute to John Carpenter's thing, you could just do something with the Rutons.
This scene that happens, I really like it, but it's also kind of odd. Like, it's basically the Doctor and the Ruton sit down on the stairwell, have a bit of a chat, which I enjoy the chat. Like, it's the Doctor talking to the bad guy, and that's interesting, and I like that idea.
Oh, and he's mocking him the whole time.
It's also time for, like, a little bit of exposition.
Yeah, a little bit. But it's handled well, dialogue-wise. But also, part of me is like, why doesn't the Rutan just kill him? Why are we stopping for a chat? Like, I like the chat, but I don't understand the pacing. You know what I mean?
I'm going to kill everyone, except you.
What distracted me this time was, so I kept looking, going, isn't that the voice of the brain of Morbius? I don't know if it is the same person, but the effect on it is so similar.
I think the effects are similar. It's the dude who plays Reuben doing the voice. Colin Douglas was the man's name.
Eventually, they all wind up sounding like Daleks. But yeah, I don't know what the Rutan's thought process was. Just let's just sit here for a minute, and have a chat.
Just got winded on those stairs.
Need to take a bit of a break. Also, you've been holding up this image of being another dude. That's got to be tiring.
Why don't you take that off and get a little comfortable? Ooh yeah, Rutan After Dark.
But basically all he says is, you know, we're Rutons, we're the Sontaran's enemy. We are trying to take over Earth, not because we, like, really care about it or anything, but that it's, like, a strategic position?
Well, I mean, it's the same thing the Sontarans would do, you know, talking about this, you know, strategic value of Earth.
How strategic? I guess it's very strategic. Like, most of the Doctor Who stories take place on Earth.
We noticed the BBC were here, so we figured we would attack.
He's like, but I've got the transmissions going, they're going to come and kill you even if you stop me. And the Doctor's like, actually, I stopped your transmission, oyster face, so your transmission will not work. And the Doctor's like, hey, listen, you're gonna die, come look. And he throws a match at it, and it screams. And it's the same scream that Reuben did earlier. Let's hear it again.
Oh!
Just put that through an electronic filter. Perfect. I like the at the end. So we find out that it, much like the Ice Warriors, it doesn't like heat. It's not completely dead, but there is a weapon up here. And I do not know what they said. I just heard early Shirley.
The term Shmurly is some sort of thing. Adam, you're British, you tell me.
I have no idea. It's technobabble, essentially, I think.
I think it's a real weapon. I remember seeing it on the Wikipedia. But Shmurly, you can't be serious.
I am serious, and stop calling me Shmurly.
But it's basically like a projectile weapon, like that they need to fill it full of stuff. He's like, basically, there's going to be a ship coming, and we need to stop it. I need a laser beam to stop it. So let's use the lighthouse!
Yay!
Actually, I think, does Leela suggest that? I vaguely remember Leela
suggest. She does, yeah. He's like, I would need something like a laser beam. I would need, like, a really powerful light. And Leela's like
this thing?
Yeah.
So, but they need a diamond to concentrate it. Kids at home, pay attention, because I'm sure this will work.
This is exact science.
Science!
Because the asshole had diamonds, so they're going to go get those.
They just take them right off his body.
Fleece the corpse, children's TV. Fleece the corpse.
For science!
Take his clothes off, take his trousers off. We got to get to the diamonds. Host some family entertainment. Take his money.
Carry the dead body all over the place.
We actually see him reaching into his pants for the family jewels.
He kept them strapped down here somewhere.
Nope, here, but I better make sure. Nope, still nothing, but... So basically, it's Shmurly is, I think it's named after William Shmurly. Basically, it's a flare, just like a rocket with, I think, like a parachute or something like that. Schmurly, for you kids at home.
We are those kids at home.
But you're not the kids in the hall.
No.
But you've seen the movie.
I've seen the movie. The movie's really good. It's the little things in life. But they get the jewels. But the Rutan shows back up, and they are running from it. But I believe the colonel goes... Or no, the doctor just picks up one of the diamonds, like, this is the only one I need, and like drops the rest. And the colonel goes back to get the rest.
He's going through them, and he's like, no, not this one. He's, like, throwing them, and then when he finds the one he needs, he just drops the rest.
Yeah, so the colonel goes back to get the rest, but because of his greed, he gets some tentacles wrapped around him and dies. Because
green is a sin, kids.
I was watching a documentary, and this... scene kind of pissed Terrence Dix off a little bit, because Leela asks, like, when the doctor gets back to Leela asks, like, what happened to him, and then the doctor says he died with honor. Terrence Dix was like, no, goddammit, he was supposed to put a pause there, because he didn't die with honor, so it's the doctor, like, lying to, you know, to make him look better, so he's like, he died with honor, so it's, but he's like, he didn't, he just said it all in one thing, like, he didn't actually give a shit. And so, like, I think in the novelization, like, he put, like, he made sure that there was a pause there. It was like, he broke it up into two sentences. He was very upset about it.
It's basically Tom Baker saying, can we wrap this up so I can go to the pub?
We're in the last episode. Let's finish it.
I take out all the pauses in this script.
That's the Christopher Walken method, right? Takes out all punctuation. So, but they shoot the ball, they put the stuff in the Shirley Murley Whirly Bird.
The Shmurly.
The Shmurly. And they shoot the ball with it, and it goes, bah! And Leela goes to look at it die. She's
just to really goad it some, too.
Yeah.
Just do a little bit of, like, well, you're dead and you suck.
She literally says, enjoy your death as I enjoyed killing you.
Well, she is a savage.
You can't imagine any of the new series companions saying that, can you?
I could see Graham saying that.
That would be quite a character twist.
The doctor is actually slightly annoyed at her celebrating.
But only slightly. I think we covered this episode, God, many years ago, when I was doing The Naked Scarf back in 2012, 2011. And my friend Andy, who I was presenting with, came up with a one prescription for Leela that's always stuck with me, like, is that... She's basically like the doctor's cat. She'll bring in, you know, cats will bring in dead, but you'll be like, oh, don't do that. No, don't do that. Don't put it there. And it does, but you don't, like, morally condemn the cat. You're just like, it's just a cat. And Leela's a bit like, killed someone. It's like, oh, don't do that. Oh, I'm going to have to tidy up now.
We'll talk about morality later.
But the doctor's like, I can't believe you killed somebody and enjoyed it. Anyway, let's kill this ship that's coming in. Let's blow it up.
That's coming in ever so slowly. It's getting closer.
So they set up the little laser beam diamond... lighthouse shtick,
And then he's like, by the way, when I get this set up, we need to run because it's going to blow up the whole place.
Carefully, don't slip on the rutan going downstairs or the rutan guts.
Worth pointing out, if the ship had moved 2 meters to the left or right, the laser beam would have missed. It just hovers in front of there for a while. It's like, guys, I don't know what they're doing. They're just hovering in front of it for ages. Like, they go, I don't know, should we land? I don't know, should we land? Do you think we should land? I don't know, should we land? Should we land? Do you think that thing's pointing at us? No, should we land? I don't know, should we land? Boom.
And what I like is that as they're running out of the lighthouse, they kind of do, Leela and the doctor kind of do this thing where the doctor runs back in and she runs past him. He stops, turns around, and chases after her.
Right, because she stops to pick up a knife, yeah.
And then she stops at the bottom of the steps to slip it into her boot.
And the doctor's like, where are you? And unlike the colonel, she doesn't suffer any repercussions for going back for something.
However, she does suffer some repercussion.
Because the lighthouse explodes. She looks at the explosion and thinks she is blind. And says, kill me, I am blind. That's a little intense. But the doctor's like, you're fine, just blink a little bit. You looked at an explosion, dummy. And then I'm pretty sure this is not how reality works, but it causes her eye color to change.
Her contacts fell out.
That was one of her, like, the last serial was supposed to be her last serial, and they wanted to bring her back, and she's like, I'm not gonna do it unless you do these couple of things. And one of them was, I cannot wear these stupid fucking contact lenses.
Okay, we'll just call it pigmentation dispersal.
Why did they care?
You know, I never even, like, noticed her eye color, so I don't... They could have popped them out and I wouldn't even have noticed.
Mm-mm.
For some reason, I just think of that story about David Bowie getting punched in the face and then his eye changing color, but I guess having the doctor punch Leela's in both eyes would have been a bit extreme and weird and unpleasant.
But yeah, so Leela's eyes are now her natural color, which is...
blue.
She went from brown to blue. I don't look that closely. Like, the video quality's kind of shitty anyway, so it's not like there's a great amount of detail.
But when the Blu-ray box set for season 15 eventually comes out, they'll be like, you'll notice how brightly blue they are.
I'll tell you what, in Robots of Death, they sometimes forgot to, like, put the effect on the robot's eyes, so they're just blue. So if they're going to pay that much attention to eye color...
Please don't make fun of Robots of Death.
I do love Robots of Death, though. It's so good.
It's yes. Very good.
So then everybody's dead, and the doctor's like, time to quote a poem.
Everybody's dead, and they leave. That's the end.
He's like, now I'm going to quote this poem, because I'm pretty sure, I think I read somewhere that Terrence Dix read, liked this poem, and that's why he decided to kill everybody off, is so that this poem could be at the end of the episode.
And Doctor doesn't look back at the lighthouse and go, there should have been another way.
I was just going to say that. It's such a... If you think in a few years, I had Warriors of the Deep, and there should have been another... And here, Baker's like, whatever, losers, spy. Sucks to be you.
Anyway, here's this poem.
He's basically singing on his way out. Everybody's dead. Everybody's dead. And then TARDIS is out.
Hey, what a coincidence. I read this poem once. In which everybody disappeared.
Strange, huh? Anyway, you want to go get some muffins? What's up?
Oh, shit. A muffin sounds really good, actually.
But that's it. That's the end of Horror Fang Rock.
We did it! Woo!
We are going to take a quick break, and we'll be back for final thoughts.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And we're inviting you to check out our podcast, The Earth Station DCU. We talk all things DC Comics, television, movies, and news.
We'll give you weekly comic recommendations and keep you informed on what's going on with DC TV and movies.
We are part of the ESO Network. You can catch a new episode weekly on iTunes, Google Music, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
As far as I can tell, a massive electric shock. He died instantly.
And we're back!
Hey, Joseph.
What?
Do you know what time it is? It is 5:59, and also, it is time for a thing that we do at the end of the podcast, which I like to call...
Yes?
This bit that I do. And then after that, final thoughts.
Final thoughts! thoughts. Cool.
Final thoughts.
All right, Adam, what are your final thoughts?
This is great. I mean, it's no-nonsense, proper Tom Baker era horror Doctor Who. You know, it's well shot, it's well acted, it's got a man who loves oil more than I probably love Doctor Who, ironically. It's definitely one that if you want to show somebody who's never seen any classic Who, this is a good one to show them.
Yeah, this is a good serial to, I would say, to like show people that haven't seen classic Who, because it's not anything that's like, it's not like super amazing. There's not like, it's not like a big epic thing, but it is like a solid just serial. It's like, it's nicely paced. It's got great acting and great everything. But I mean, it's a solid story. I wouldn't say it's like the best of all time sort of deal, but it is like just a really solid, fun time. Also, Leela is amazing in this serial. So I enjoyed it a lot. Those are my final thoughts. Brian!
I think in terms of it being a classic horror story, it hits it. the inhabitants of the lighthouse being systematically picked off one by one, you know, kind of has allusions to our slasher genre that we have in films. The characters, you know, basically, they're kind of, you know, one-dimensional. They each are pretty much stock characters. You have you have Ruben, the old conservative one. You have Hawkins, the young newbie, and all that. Then we have the folks from the ship. Just basically kind of representing the worst of humanity. But yeah, I mean, the characters don't really go beyond their character descriptions. But that aside, it's nice. It kind of adds a little bit to the mythos of Doctor Who with the Rutons. And it's a good story, and it's one I've always quite enjoyed. And I agree with you, Joe. Leela is amazing. This is a really good story for her, in terms of her ability to kind of not just be a yes doctor companion. And I love it. I love it more than I love oil.
Yeah, this is a pretty good, pretty solid serial. It's not one of my favorites, but that has a lot more to do with the fact that there are just a lot of really, really good ones this run. There are just other ones that I like more for various reasons. But this one was definitely a fun watch. I do think I'm kind of ready, as much as I've enjoyed the sort of horror era that we've been in, I'm ready to be into the sort of goofy camp stuff that I've heard that we are moving on to. Just because it's interesting. It's always interesting to see when someone takes the show and do something different with it and how that works and how it plays out. So I'm ready for it. I'm ready for some Douglas Adams stories, too.
But yeah, that's Tara Fangrock. Before we go, anything you guys want to plug?
Our Twitter is at imbecilepod. Our email is imbecilepod@gmail.com. We're on Tumblr. We're on LinkedIn. We're on Grindr, Tinder. We're basically all over the place. Harry Sullivan is an imbecile, folks.
I was about to say, you might want to say the title.
We're very bad at self-promotion.
We suck. We suck.
I enjoy the show a lot. I've listened to every episode.
Thank God somebody has.
I do kind of tune out occasionally because I don't want to spoil myself on stuff I haven't seen. But when I do pay attention, I enjoy what I hear. So
Adam and I would confess that, you know, during the podcast, we tend to tune out as well. So
what you're basically saying, you love the bits you could be bothered to listen to, but occasionally you're just like, I'm done for at least 10 minutes now. It's fair, like Brian says, we do it ourselves, you can tell.
It's that Reginald D. Hunter line, when people say it's God's plan, that's just code for I'm done thinking.
I basically listened to it the same way that I watched the Riff Tracks did the Five Doctors recently. So I basically, when I watched that, I was just like, I'm just going to kind of coast and enjoy the jokes, but not pay attention to what's actually happening very much, because I want to savor the experience when I watch it for real. I get the highlights. I'm a very weird person. I understand.
I mean,
this. That's
why we're here doing this.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't just watch Doctor Who.
Couldn't just watch it bits and pieces. He has to watch it all the way from the beginning and bring your poor suffering wife with you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You've been enjoying it though, right?
Yeah. I'm I'm just glad, like, this is fun and all, the podcast stuff.
I'm just glad you have something to do, honey.
I'm just glad you're watching New Who with me now, instead of waiting until you get to it.
I have memories of Joe going, I want to watch Doctor Who, but I want to watch it from the beginning before I watch a new series. That's my Joe impersonation. It's not Don Knotts. So
we talked about it the very first time I met you.
Yeah.
In person. And I was, at that time, I was stuck in the middle of the web planet.
Yeah, a lot of people probably give up in there. I'm going to watch all of it from the start during the web planet. I say that's a man who's quite fond of the web planet, but it's like Jodie Whittaker said recently, I want to watch all of Doctor Who, and I hope somebody told her that she doesn't have to do that just to play the part. You know, do not put yourself with some of this. It's all right.
I still feel a little bad about what we did for the podcast, because my friend Josh has never seen Classic Who, and he's like, I'd like to do an episode. And I was like, oh, interesting. So I put him on Web Planet because I know he had zero preconceived ideas about what the web planet is, or
we did
Classic
tell
Who.
Him it was a fan favorite.
Did we?
We did.
Divorces have happened for less. I mean, it's.
Oh man, you know, it's a Tom Baker episode, and I haven't done my line that Adam loves when I do. Old Tom's putting it in now.
Do you know that story? I don't know if I should share that story again on another podcast if people don't know it.
I don't know that story.
Get ready. Get ready.
It's been brought up now, so.
Okay, so there apparently Tom Baker once got intimate with a young lady, and as they were about to engage in the act, he apparently said, "Tom's putting it in now." This is why occasionally on Twitter, people with reference to Tom's putting it in now will come up on certain Doctor Who Twitter accounts. Not any official Doctor Who Twitter accounts, to the best of my knowledge.
That's the actual worst.
it's amazing the number of people I know who aren't particularly big Doctor Who fans who know that story, though. And I haven't told them. And I see people tweeting about it. Usually when Tom Baker's birthday comes up.
Huh.
He means cake. He means cake.
Oh, boy. That is a great story, I think.
It's not. It's a terrible story.
Yeah.
It is.
Oh, boy.
I mean, you know, it's no worse than Tom talking about, you know, masturbating in a circle in Liverpool when he was a child.
Onto a biscuit, if I remember the autobiography correctly.
I have questions. No, you know what? I thought better of it. I do not.
They actually reference, they do something similar to that in an episode of Big Mouth. Loser has to eat it.
Yeah, that's actually, that's what Tom Baker says as well. I don't know what men used to do in the 50s and 60s as children, to be honest.
God, I'm so fucking glad we invented the internet.
But seriously, I'm glad my generation came up when there was excessive TV and the internet. So I never had to go to any of my male friends.
And biscuits were taxed heavily, right?
Now y'all can do that weird shit in private, the way God intended.
I've never had to say to my male friends, let's sit around in a circle and jerk off, guys, because we're that bored. You know, it's never come up, metaphorically speaking.
It's World War II. All the cool kids are doing it.
Oh, boy. The world's fucked up, you guys.
Men alone in a lighthouse, long time.
And before I forget, jizz.
It's not a Brian Snape episode if there isn't a mention of jizz.
There we go, kids.
Oh,
good lord.
You had to wait 2 hours, but you heard it.
If you like this episode...
That's the explicit tag on iTunes, right?
Yeah, we did. If you like this episode, why? If you like this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on watcherasslon.com. And be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes. It helps us out with the iTunes magic thing. I don't know.
It helps more people find our explicit content.
Yes.
And if you listen to Harry Sullivan as an imbecile, well, Adam and I would be surprised. So
go rate and comment our podcast and Harry Sullivan as an imbecile on iTunes, because we both like it. So do it. And if you'd like to help us out even more, you can go to watcherasslon.com/support, and there you will find a link to our Patreon page, which you can get to just by going to patreon.com/watchathon. And there you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards, like day early episodes, uncut video of the podcast records, and bonus episodes, and live streams, where we watch the episodes with you guys. Also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wish list where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us. We'll mention you in the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
You can follow him on Tumblr at mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com. And another special shout out to Vincent EL for doing our theme song.
Yeah, thanks.
You can follow. You can check out their website at swinglish.nu. And tune in next time when we talk about
the invisible enemy. You can't see it, but you can hear it.
I've been told there's going to be small things.
I bet, yeah, Tony has been told that there are small things in it, and she's super excited.
I'm ready.
Thanks for listening, you guys. So keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you. For now.
See you later. I just want to be friends.
Goodbye, and take care.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.